One of the reasons why dreams feel so real to the dreamer is that if you look at the brain waves created when a person is asleep, they are virtually identical to the waves when a person is awake. And so for the dreamer, it is another reality. It is every bit as real as you and I sitting here and having this conversation. So for the dreamer, he or she cannot distinguish between dreaming and being awake. And so that's why they're so powerful, because they seem in every way as if they are real life.
That's Jean Gorski. I know her as Mrs. Gorski. She was my high school psychology teacher. She's one of those teachers that students never forget. She inspires students, and her quiet, sympathetic, and intelligent demeanor really captures those in her class. I remember signing up for courses the semester before my senior year, and my friends told me to get a class with her. They told me that Mrs. Gorski was a genius. Her students think highly of her.
Mrs. Gorski is definitely one of my favorite teachers, for sure. Real fun, very passionate.
She was one of my favorites, actually. A lot of my other teachers were really boring, and she wasn't. She made it interesting.
The level of interest and, passion for what she was teaching was really impressive.
I remember the lesson on dreaming. She had brought up that idea of dreams and reality and how the two can unexpectedly mix. A few students had shared their stories, and then we broke into a discussion between one another about the weird and strange dreams we've had. I noticed Mrs. Gorski quietly standing behind the podium in front of the class, smiling and listening to some of the students' dreams. She then said that she had a dream that she would like to share with us. The class fell silent, and she began to explain her incredible dream.
So this dream involves me and my sister. You should probably know that she was the oldest in my family, 8 years older than I, and she actually saved my life when I was 4 years old. We had gone camping as a family. She was 12, I was 4, and we went to the edge of this dock. I remember her warning me to stay away from the sort of slippery, wet spots. I completely ignored her and crouched down to get a better look at something in the water. And the next thing I knew, I was underwater. And I can even remember opening my eyes and seeing all these weird colors under the water and thinking how strange it was that the water didn't look like it did from the surface. And the next thing I knew, she had me by the back of my collar of my shirt, and she was dragging me out of the water. And she pulled me so hard and so high, she actually set me on my feet on the dock. And then she tells the story is that I took off running because I think at some point realized something bad had almost happened. And so we told that story all the time about how she'd been only 12, but had the presence of mind to pull me out, and she saved my life.
Jean and her sister Deb had always been close. Even as kids, she was like Jean's second mom.
When I was just a baby, I only wanted her. She would come and sing me Sweet Low Sweet Chariot in my room until I went to sleep. But she would oblige me and go and do that. So we were always very, very close.
So fast forward to March of 1999. When Jean received the news about her sister, Deb.
She had been diagnosed with a kind of leukemia, and it took us all very much by surprise. And in fact, it was less than a month from the day that she was diagnosed until the day she died. She had been in the hospital up in Chicago. She was at Rush Presbyterian. And the first weekend that she was there, I had gone and stayed the weekend with her and slept on the floor of her hospital room, and we tried to pretend it was like a sleepover and that kind of thing. And then the next weekend, I got a call from my dad. I was headed up to Chicago, but he called me early to say that she was struggling.
At the time, they thought she was having a bad anxiety attack. And Deb had gone through anxiety attacks before, and it was something that Jean was familiar with. She had worked with Deb to overcome past attacks. On the phone, her dad asked Jean to drive up to the hospital to help calm her down. He said she was very agitated.
And so I remember throwing everything into my car and heading up to Chicago. And when I got there, probably within 20 minutes, I knew it wasn't an anxiety attack. Something was wrong. She couldn't catch her breath, and she was just, it just wasn't the same as previous anxiety attacks. And so I called for the nurse, and when they came in, they realized that her blood oxygen level was really low. And so they moved her to the intensive care unit, like right away. And on the way to intensive care, her heart stopped beating. And so they actually had to revive her. And we were just all shocked. I was like, oh my goodness, what is going on? And knowing what I know now, when I look back on it, I know that the medication that they had given her, basically, it sort of wipes out all of your white blood cells in the hope of then rebuilding them. So you eliminate a person's ability to fight off infection, and so they're very vulnerable for a while. Well, in that window when she was really vulnerable, somehow she picked up an infection of some kind, and that's what was happening that last weekend, but we didn't know that then.
After the first incident of her heart stopping, Deb was moved into intensive care. And as her family anxiously awaited for any updates or any news on her status, Jean and her family quickly became acquainted with the hospital protocol.
There were maybe 6 beds in this area where she was. And throughout the course of the day, as we waited and visited her periodically, things would go wrong with patients in that intensive care area. And if a patient went into cardiac arrest, they would call for a series of doctors and nurses to come and help try to revive that patient. And they would page doctors to do that. And so what we learned was that through the overhead PA system, they would say, paging Dr. Cart, room 604, paging Dr. Cart, and you would see all these people come running to the intensive care unit to try to help that patient. So it was trying to make it sound, I think, a little less threatening, but even the words Dr. Cart meant that they were bringing a crash cart, you know, to that area to try to help that patient survive. So it was very serious. And in fact, later that afternoon, we heard a page for Dr. Cart to my sister's room. So we knew her number. And so her heart had stopped again for a second time in the same day. So all this was happening on Saturday. Saturday night, I stayed in the hospital and slept in the hospital waiting room, which if you've ever had the misfortune to do that in most places, it's miserable because it's a regular straight back chair that can't recline. You can't stretch out at all. There are people, of course, who are also waiting for their family members, and they're coming in and out, and there's conversation. So you sleep terribly in those places. But in the morning, a nurse helped me find a shower so I could kind of clean up, and it was a brand new day, and it was like, all right, you know, this is gonna be all right. And then my family regathered because the doctors wanted to speak to us. And they told us that the doctor said that basically it had been a miracle that she'd survived the night.
The doctor explained that the infection that Deb had contracted caused her organs to shut down one by one. He was so surprised that she had survived the night that he didn't know how much longer she had.
Oh, I mean, it's just so terrible to hear that news. I'll never forget the look on my parents' face. It was just so, so heartbreaking. And so Sunday night, when everyone sort of started to drift back to their, my family started to drift back to their hotels or to go home, I couldn't leave.
Yeah.
I just had to stay.
Jean went into Deb's room one last time before going to sleep that night. It was sometime around 2 in the morning. She talked to Deb and told her that she would do whatever Deb wanted. If she wanted to continue to fight, Jean promised she would stand by her side for as long as it took.
I felt a little better after I had said that to her. And I went back to the waiting room and lay down. And try to sleep in those chairs. And I finally fell asleep, and I started to dream. And in the dream, she and I, my sister and I, were together in this absolutely stunning garden. It was no place I've ever seen in my waking life. It had these gorgeous blossoms of many different colors, the brightest yellow and red I'd ever seen. The greenery was just lush. It was stunning, just absolutely stunning. And I was standing in front of her, and she was seated on a bench. And I sort of looked around this beautiful landscape. And to my right, I actually saw this shimmering light. In so many ways, it's what sort of the classic stereotype about go to the light when someone is about to die. That's what it looked like. Although I didn't really think about that in the dream. It was just so pretty. It sort of mesmerized me. And as I turned to look at it, my sister sort of followed my gaze and looked at it too. And in the dream, I knew that that's where we were going. And I sort of took a step toward it. And my sister held back. She was not sure. And this is what's so amazing to me. In that dream, I wasn't scared. I wasn't sad. It was all good. And I held my hand out to her and sort of nodded toward the light and told her, "It's okay. It's right here." She reached up and took my hand and got to her feet. And we walked toward that light. And it was at that exact moment that I woke up, because overhead they were paging for Dr. Cart to her room. Her heart had stopped again. And chaos erupted, and people came running, and the doctor came to me and told me they were trying to revive her, but he wasn't sure how successful they would be, and did I want to come in? And I told him no, because I knew she was already gone. She died that moment she walked with me to the light. And I feel so honored, because I believe my sister came to me. You know, I was the one that could do that for her.
What do you say to those who think that the dream was a coincidence?
Scientific evidence aside, I don't believe it. I really think I was there with her.
The dream came as a huge comfort to her family and friends, especially her parents.
My parents, I remember telling my father about it that same day. I think for him, there was some comfort in knowing that, one, that she hadn't been alone, but also, too, that here is another reason to believe that she had indeed passed to the other side or gone to heaven. And that meant a lot to him, too.
Debbie always watched out for her younger sister. She was there to sing Jean to sleep as a child. She saved her life when Jean fell into the lake. And now it was Jean's turn to take care of her older sister, to release Deb from the pain, and to guide her into the light. Everything had come full circle.
It was so good for me to be able to do something for her. And so here, this older sister who had looked out for me always, sort of like when she needed me the most, I could be there. And I love it. I'm so glad for it.